This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Good evening. You're listening to Well, Well, Well here on Joy, and I am Renee, your host for the next hour. We're going on an expedition to explore some of the ways people in our community are doing relationships or not doing relationships. One thing we can learn as a queer community is that our relationships can take many different forms, and that's completely okay. So being queer means we don't always have to prescribe to traditional relationship norms. Some people do, and that's okay too. So on tonight's show, we'll look at some different types of relationships that exist, but we'll also start at the beginning and discuss dating and how we're doing that. After a song, I'll be welcoming my guest host, Jenna Trossel, who's brought two of her people along with her this evening. A little bit about Jenna. Jenna is a queer feminist relationship anarchist and runs a counselling business called Spectra Counselling, supporting nonconformists such as kinksters, sex workers, polyamorous folk, and people under the rainbow umbrella who challenge the status quo. She's one of the moderators of PolyVic discussion groups, and I think I might be polyamorous now what? A panel run every 2 months bringing a variety of poly perspectives to newbies. She also hosts workshops on boundaries and communication and body positivity. Jenna's partner joins us in the studio, John Nicolaitis. Welcome, John. John is a queer feminist relationship anarchist who works primarily in logistics, but in the rest of their life tries to support people in creation of intentional communities and inclusive spaces. They are one of the facilitators of PolyVic discussion groups and used to make a video games podcast. We also have Josh here in the studio with us as well, and we will let him introduce himself right after a song. Oh, hello. This is Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9, and I'm Renee, and tonight I'm joined in the studio by my guests, Jenna, John, and Josh. Hello, Jenna. How's it going?
Excellent. So glad to be here.
Welcome to Joy. Hello there, John.
Hello, hello.
How are you going this evening?
I'm doing quite well.
Yeah. And hi there, Josh.
Hey. How you going?
I'm great, thanks. I learned all about Jenna and John, but I haven't heard about you yet. What's your deal, doll?
Well, I'm here on a trip from Canada, and I met Jenna 6 years ago at a place called the Rhythm Hut on the Central Coast in Gosford. And I'm just here on this one-week trip to visit her and get to know John as well.
Yes, yes. It's great. Everyone's getting to know each other.
Yeah. That's not awkward at all.
This could be the most awkward, but also most informative show we've ever done, which is really great, and I'm super excited to have you all on the show.
Yeah, most awkward show. That's what I'm aiming for right now.
Most awkward show. It's your goal. Yeah. So during tonight's show, we're going to be talking about all things relationships and being queer, but my three guests in the studio here are all polyamorous. Is that how you would identify?
Polyamorous, solo poly relationship anarchist is probably how I
always think of polyamorous as the umbrella that all other things kind of sit under.
Yeah.
But not everybody agrees with that.
And not everyone does, but that's okay.
Yeah, and that's okay. And I guess we talked about this before we came live on air about how language is so important, but it also can be quite limiting. Yeah. And it's important that we know our identities, but don't get too hung up on them at the same time. And you identify as poly, Josh?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's funny. A lot of the work that I've done is actually on not holding too many identities, just keeping as open as possible. But at the same time, my life would display polyamorous behavior.
Yeah, I like the way you put that. That's actually a really great way to put it. And yeah, for the queer community, in my observation, we really dislike labels. Yet we're finding more and more by the week. So yeah. I think humans are great.
I always think labels are great, like in a moment to describe something. But if you like treat them as prescriptive, they can become problematic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Descriptive versus constrictive.
Yeah.
It's getting deep already.
I'll go there.
We'll start off with Jenna. What was your first awareness of polyamory?
My first awareness that polyamory was a thing that other people practiced was when I first read Sex at Dawn about 7 years ago. But like when I look back on my diaries from when I was a kid, like I had crushes on like six different people at once. And I was like, I like this person and this person likes this person. And I'm going to set this person up with this person because they seem to like each other. And maybe if it doesn't work out, then they'll love me. And like, I fell in love with two best friends in college, and I had a lot of shame around that because they cared about each other a lot, but they were just friends, and I couldn't figure out kind of why we couldn't all make it work.
Be together, yeah.
But it was like a really rough time for both of them and for me as well.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, coming across this book and going, oh, there's like a, like other people practice this. This is a thing. And like, it was just, it was a light bulb moment. I was like, oh, this is me. This has always been me. Mm. Wow. Mm-hmm. Cool. I'm not bad or wrong or terrible because I love more than one person. This is excellent. What can I do with this?
Yeah. And you've like now made a career out of it as well and helping other people, which is phenomenal. What about yourself, John?
For me, it was like one of those situational things. I always had like polyamorous intent in how I lived my life. Mm. But then when I wanted to start seeing someone who has already seen someone, I was like, how can we make this happen? I don't know. And they were like, oh, well, have you heard about polyamory? I tend to learn a lot from my partners rather than from resources, which might be a failing of mine. But in that relationship, we just kind of learned and explore the feelings of like jealousy and how to practice loving multiple people and how that could be. And it just, I've just been polyamorous ever since, pretty much.
And how long has that been?
I think it'd be like 8 years, maybe 9 years, I think. For a while, basically after high school.
Yeah, cool. And what about you, Josh?
I've been exploring open style and polyamorous relationships for the past 5, 6, 7 years. But same as Jenna, when I look back in my actual life, I've always loved multiple people. And it was always this like half happy and then half shameful thing, honestly. Mm. There was always a feeling like, oh, am I doing something wrong? Am I hurting people? And sometimes people do get hurt, or I've been hurt in these situations. But learning, having words to work with, having like actual frameworks to discuss now has actually changed everything. Like the last even 3 years, something has really shifted in our collective culture.
Yeah.
And the ability to speak about these things and understand each other's boundaries, most importantly, with these words has helped significantly.
Yeah. And so instead of people going, oh, well, he's just a player. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or she's just a slut.
Well, I was going to say, it's the S word for women and it's the P word for men mostly, right? And like that it's unfortunate just how, it's wonderful now that there's so many bridges towards these better communication styles.
Mm-hmm. And roughly how long do you think you've been exploring this kind of?
Yeah, 5, 6, 7 years.
Yeah. And for yourself, Jenna?
Yeah, probably about 7 years.
Yeah, the same. Cool. Yeah. And you mentioned polyamory being like the umbrella term. Non-monogamy, is that the same as polyamory?
Well, so there's more, so I guess, yeah, John's umbrella term, like there's also swingers and like people who are, I guess, in open relationships, and there's subtleties of dynamics that make sense to the people who go by those labels that other people kind of, you know, some of them agree or some of them don't agree about where that belongs. But like, I kind of just see it's all consensual non-monogamy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
Because they all kind of blur together in different ways. And some people also practice similar things differently, and they might label themselves as something, but the practice might look like something else to other people.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, yeah, it's all in that non-monogamy space.
Yeah. Cool. And you mentioned that you're relationship anarchists. Now, whenever I was lining up the interview with you, you said it, and I thought that you'd just come up with something really cool and funny in the moment, but you were like, no, actually, it's a thing, and this is what it means. Can you explain to our listeners about relationship anarchy?
Sure. I think John would actually be better at that, because I considered myself solo poly more so than relationship anarchist for a really long time, and I feel like John's been practicing relationship anarchy for longer.
Yeah, I would say that for a while I was practicing the idea of relationship anarchy, which to me is treating each individual relationship on its own merits and at its own place. Like, and even re-examining my existing relationships, not just romantic, but with friends or even family. A lot of my most recent work has been trying to readjust where I sit with my family and the people closest to me and where I can meet them most comfortably. And so it has that kind of anarchist philosophy of breaking down the status quo. I think it was even actually a relationship anarchy was originally an anarchist text.
Yeah, it was a manifesto.
Yeah, a manifesto that I haven't actually read, to be clear.
Neither have I.
Yeah, But it was kind of, there's a kind of a little bit of co-opting into the polyamorous community there, because the anarchy side was more about that disruption of status quo.
Yeah.
And in polyamory, it's typically designed to think about like the disruption of the polyamorous status quo and that kind of thing.
Mm. Yeah. So I really like the concept, actually. And whenever Jenna sent me the article and I read it, I was like, I can really identify with this, because not all of my relationships are romantic or sexual, yet I still put as much care into those relationships as I do the ones that are. And I'm like, oh, that's totally me. I really like it.
Yeah.
So thank you for explaining that.
Yeah. For me, relationship anarchy is just kind of like, is this working for the person in front of me right now? Like, our whatever relationship we have, whatever the label is this working for us right now? And if not, what needs to change so that we both feel comfortable? And that might mean, you know, escalating it into a different, like, type of... I don't like the term escalation, but like, but changing it into like a more romantic relationship, or changing it into a more friendship relationship, or, you know, seeing each other more, seeing each other less. Like, it's all dependent on both of us checking in and going, I'm happy with this, I'm not happy with this.
Yeah, am I getting my needs met from this? Yeah, cool. I really like it. So we will take a really quick break, and we will be back shortly to talk more about polyamory. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. We have been talking this evening about polyamory in the queer community, which is awesome, and something that we don't really talk a lot about within the community. So definitely keen to learn a lot more from you three. So just finishing off from the last segment, I had some more questions around the kind of dynamic that you all have, and wondered if there's primary partners happening.
So I don't like hierarchy in my relationships, because I find that that's more about the idea of security than about actually allowing people to just relate in whatever way feels comfortable to them.
Yeah.
So I call everybody, I kind of default to lover if I'm with somebody in like a kind of romantic sense. And then I check in with people about like what they prefer to be called. So I call John my partner, and we had like a whole conversation about like, what does partner mean to you, and like what, you know, what connotations do you have around that, and what do you expect from a partner, and like all of that stuff. And I called Josh my comet, which is another poly phrase about like, kind of, you know, because like Josh goes and does his own thing and like has not millions of other but like a few other lovers, and like, you know, he's usually in Canada, and like when we see each other it's great, and sometimes it's sexual and sometimes it's not, but it's just like I really value his existence in my life. And so
comet is a term that's used in the poly community.
Totally. It's like people who come in a blaze of glory and matter for a little while, and they go off on their own orbital, and you're in your own orbital, and it's like every so often you're just like,
I actually was just introduced to that term last night, and I was like, yes, yes.
That's beautiful.
That is a thing.
I'm a person who's traveling almost all the time, so like I do, there's people that I'm with in different areas at different times for different lengths of time. Sometimes someone starts off as a lover and then they end up with a more serious partner by the next time I've come back, and I think, oh great, what else do you want to do? Do you want to play chess or go for a walk, you know, like so I consider the word comet actually works really well.
Yeah, I like it a lot. So comet, everyone, remember that. And can you explain to the listeners the difference between people who are poly and solo poly? I know there's a lot of terms being thrown around here. So
yes,
well, I would say that so the difference in my mind with poly in general and solo poly is, in solo poly, the first relationship you have is with yourself. So you check in with yourself. You see if you're meeting your own needs. Like, and other relationships are kind of sort of done around that. So I would say that I have some solo poly tendencies, because I make sure that I'm getting my needs met. And if I get my needs met, I feel like I can get everyone's needs met better. So that's kind of where I see it. It's just that kind of intention towards self commitment.
Yeah. And like, there have been multiple instances in our relationship where I'll be like, hey, like, I need to just have a day to myself. Is that cool? I know we scheduled in this thing, but like, I just need some mental health practice. And
see, I feel like I'm the one who does that more, because I definitely know those moments where you're just like, I just need to be alone and do a thing by myself, with whether it's reading a book or even seeing somebody else too.
And you're obviously both really good at communicating with each other, which is a big part of being poly.
I think a very important thing I would like to bring up is that we're very lucky.
Yes.
Like, Jenna and I, have very similar like ethics and ideas, and we communicate very similarly. So it's almost like luck that we're doing so well because we just talk the same language. Yeah. When that might not happen to everybody, and that's okay. Like, we're very lucky. We've only been dating for 7 months,
but like even it's we're just as like intensely serious as we were like in the first month, and we're still like definitely in new relationship energy still too. Yeah. Like, who knows how long that will last? But like we're like, oh, this is great, fantastic. This person is exactly like as interesting and wonderful and challenging as I wanted love to be, and they are also, you know, able to love other people and like be with other people, and so
which is an important thing for you and an important thing for me as well, because it's part of how we feel.
From an outside perspective, I think you guys are beautiful. Like, I love watching you connect. I love watching you guys communicate. It's been very special to me to see everyone so well taken care of.
Thanks. Yeah. I just had to move halfway across the world. It's great. And then move like 3 more times in Melbourne.
It's so refreshing to be around people who can be so honest and communicative with each other. And I think like it's important to note that it's okay to just be really honest.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we have lots of, I guess, what could be uncomfortable conversations.
Yes.
But like, you know, I might be like, hey, so I've got something to talk to you about. I'm a little bit scared, like, because it's a little bit personal. Is that cool? Do you feel like okay to hold space for me right now? Or like, are you okay, open to?
And actually, Jenna and I have had a conversation in advance in how we like to be told things like that.
Yeah.
Wow. So I know if I have to tell Jenna something that maybe I'm scared about, I know that I just hold her hand and reach out and contact, because that makes her feel like we're connected.
Yeah.
Which is the thing she told me after I asked her.
That's so lovely. And something that, as someone who's newly exploring poly, that I've noticed is that I started to not say things to protect people, mm-hmm. and that was really not a good idea.
Yeah.
And we do that, though. Yeah. We do that. We try to protect the other person by not being honest.
I am in a whole thing about rescuing right now, where I am trying to not rescue anybody, and like because you know, I love to swoop in and be like, oh, it's fine, I got you, and it's totally disempowering. And so I'm like, okay, I'm just going to trust that you can handle the truth, and whatever happens, at least it's honest.
Yeah, that's cool.
Sorry, Josh, you were trying to say something?
Oh, just those same issues of communication come up in every sort of relationship and monogamy as well. We hide things from monogamous partners because we don't want to hurt their feelings. I think what poly is often is a call to opening up dialogue that normally just doesn't happen.
Yeah, for sure. So I've heard it thrown around a bit, and I wondered if any of you have any experience with it, with poly being a great lifestyle for people who are asexual or aromantic.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to speak to that.
I would say definitely, because it, like, the wonderful thing about people having multiple relationships is no one person has to be everything to someone. Mm. Like, I think often people who are asexual and in romantic relationships that are monogamous, they feel pressure to have a lot more sex than they maybe feel comfortable with, because that's what you do in a monogamous relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, that if the other person wants sex, then you have to, in some way, have sex with them, or you're failing your duty as a partner. But it's like, well, you know, you can just explore whatever with this person and whatever works for you too. And then you can have lots of other things that are also mutually satisfying. And so it's very freeing for people to be more themselves.
Yeah. I would happily just be a cuddle buddy for someone who was asexual.
Totally.
If that's what they wanted.
Yes.
Shit, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a nice time.
Yeah.
And those kind of non-sexual relationships happen outside of people who are asexual as well in the polyamorous community too. So I think polyamory is a great space for people to be honest and communicative about what they want from relationships with people.
Mm-hmm. I have a semi-romantic kissing buddy. So, like, we are mostly friends, but then every so often we make out. And, like, we don't want to, you know, do anything more than that. But, like, it's great.
You've just acknowledged that, and that's cool.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we had talked off air about how when marriage equality was happening and campaigning and stuff was happening, that there was a bit of a disconnect between the queer community and the poly community. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah. So I was in Sydney when that was happening, like, and it's the first time I've ever been angry at the sky because some jerk wrote no in the sky, and I was just like, how do you get that down? But I think for me the real shame was that I know so many people who are in the queer community, myself included, who are polyamorous, and I felt so disappointed that the queer community was distancing itself from the poly community in order to achieve marriage equality, because the argument was, well, you know, if we open it up to
people in the same sex getting married, then what's to stop, you know, three people or four people from getting married? And like the queer community was responding, well, that's crazy. We just want the two of us because we just love each other so much. And it seemed like it could have been the perfect time for people to be like, well, why are we just making marriage between two people? Like, you know, there's nothing inherently wrong with three people being in love or four people being in love. Like, okay, maybe it's a little bit weirder legally, but it's totally possible to figure this out. Mm-hmm. And so, like, half of me was really excited when the plebiscite, you know, got passed. And then half of me was just like, oh, but there's still part of me that needs to fight for equality.
Yeah. There's this whole other part of me that's also part of being queer for a lot of other people as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry that happened. That's really shit. Mm. And on that, I guess I wondered, are a large portion of people who practice poly queer? Mm. It seems to be the case.
I think so.
Pansexual.
I would say like maybe 50-50. There's no real numbers here. It's from my own anecdotal experience. Yeah. I would say there are a lot of, you know, non-queer people who do practice polyamory. Mm. And, you know, and especially when you look at the other styles of non-monogamy as well, in terms of like, you know, swinging or monogamish or stuff like that, you know, the numbers get a bit kind of broader. So, I do know a lot of queer people who are polyamorous, myself included. Mm. But yeah, I would say that there's like a good mix of people, actually.
Yeah, cool. And do you think that there's a linkage between people who practice poly and kink? I feel like they always seem to like come up in the same conversations.
I would say definitely. Like, 'cause kink is already kind of outside of the status quo. And you know, what works for people sexually doesn't necessarily work for them in relationships, but so people might be okay with getting their needs met from somebody else because, you know, their partner is vanilla, and so then they're already seeing two people, and then it's like polyamory is just like another person or two people, or it's like, oh, I've developed feelings for my dom or whatever. And
I think once you've got the concept of like play partners established, the idea of other relationships in different contexts is like already there.
Yeah,
you know, people who you see in specific ways and stuff like that, which is, you know, it's like very polyamorous and non-monogamous in its design of like how you're living your life and being kinky. So
the weirder link for me is like the fact that a lot of geeks are polyamorous. Why is that a thing? Like, why do you know us?
Fantasy novels? I blame fantasy novels.
Or like fan fiction.
A lot of people, like Stranger in a Strange Land, like opened up their idea of, you know, people being able to be with more than one person.
And a lot of times when people start to open up one direction, they go, well, how far does this go and where else can we take it? You know, like it's like really just deviating from the norm at all can tend to lead us down different pathways of exploration.
Yeah, that's such a good point. How do others react whenever you tell them that you're poly? You mentioned earlier that your family were in town.
Yeah, so my family came and visited my parents came and visited for 2 months, and they've known that I'm poly for a long time. And I was dating a guy, and I went home and visited them, and I told them about this other guy that I was seeing, and my mom was like really against it. And then she met him on Skype, and somehow the fact that he was cute made it okay. But they've both been really uncomfortable with it for a really long time. So I, they like John.
Yes.
They met one
the
of my
very
other
conventional appearing looking partner.
Yeah. And they met one of my other, lovers at the time as well, which went a little bit differently. And my dad, like, I think both of them are kind of really committed to the idea of monogamy as being the only way for them to do their relationship. And so they're like, my dad is like worried about me missing out on commitment or something. And I'm like, well, I'm pretty sure that I can do commitment. Like, you know, I've been 3 or 4 year relationships before. Like, it's just a matter of me loving more than one person.
Yeah.
So I ended up actually dragging them to the, I think I might be polyamorous now, what panel that I put on. And they listened to like a whole bunch of people. And one of the panelists was like, polyamory is relationships on hard mode. And I think my dad was like, oh, okay, so you're just doing relationships differently. And maybe it's actually harder and I don't understand what you're doing. But yeah, they're just like, as long as you're happy. I'm lucky. I'm like super lucky that they're mostly like, we just want you to be happy.
What about you, John?
Yeah, I think for me, in my broader life, when I talk to people outside of mostly like, you know, at work or in my personal life, I don't get a lot of pushback. But then again, I don't get a lot of pushback about many things I say, and I have a feeling that it has to do with my privilege as a cis male person. I look, you know, or presenting at least, like I look very, like I can kind of get away with stuff that other people I know for a fact don't get away with.
Yeah.
I think actually with my family, it's one of those situations where it kind of comes up a little. You know, my sister's totally like, eh, whatever.
Yeah.
But there's a bit of, I had to when Jenna's parents were visiting, because we were all, my parents and her parents and us were all going to be together, but there's also other people involved.
Yeah.
I wanted to remind them. It's like, hey, we're not, you know, monogamous, we're polyamorous. Like, I'm seeing other people at this point in time.
I invited one of the other people that John was seeing to Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Which was...
It was adorable.
That's cute.
Yeah, it was great. It was, you know, that's the kind of stuff I want because, you know, these are all people I care about, so why wouldn't I want them together?
Yeah.
Yeah. And did you have something to say,
Josh? Just like there are... there is a little bit of pushback sometimes, and mostly just you can tell it's a bit threatening to other people's perceptions. But one thing also is when I first started to become poly, I kind of had a, like, screw monogamy kind of war against that as well. And I found that actually really didn't help. And as I've gotten more mature and more grounded in my own practice and being in open relationships and monogamy, I don't really care what other people do.
No.
And you can tell that there's something, a bit of a mutual respect that's gained when two people are just like, oh, I do it this way, you do it that way. And we all just go la 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 our own way.
Yeah. Yeah, perfect. Yeah. And I suppose it's helpful to have other poly people around you who kind of get you and be able to have chats. And
yeah, and we're lucky that Melbourne has such a huge poly community, because like I've definitely had conversations with people where they're just like, oh, so you just don't understand how to love, like you're just bad at love, and I'm just like, no,
I'm really good at it, that's why I'm poly. Yeah,
that's really offensive.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we're gonna have another short break and we will be back after a song. This is Well 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 here on Joy. So we've been talking about queer relationships, but mostly polyamory, but we're gonna take it back a little bit and we're gonna talk about dating. Now, I'll just give you a disclaimer. The three people that are sitting here aren't specialists in the area, but they are humans with opinions, and we're just going to chat. So dating, I can hear a collective sigh from the listeners. It's hard work, isn't it?
Oh, good Lord, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone can agree on that. Dating is hard work, but it also can be a really wonderful thing. And putting yourself out into the world can be quite challenging for many reasons. But what do you all think some of the biggest challenges are for people dating today?
Oh, God.
I think one thing is that we're so quick to want to find our one life partner and go down the road completely. So you might meet someone and you feel some love, of course, because we feel love when we date people. But then it's like, okay, I'm going to be with this person forever. But you've only really just met. There's something that seems like a weird thing that's very culturally to what we're up to right now.
Yeah. The relationship escalator.
Yeah. But it's like you start dating someone before your friends. Like,
yeah, yeah.
To me, especially as a polyamorous person, I always seem to have friendships that escalate to relationships.
Yeah.
And that makes sense because I already know who these people are and I like them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, let's see what else we can do and where else we can go in our relationship.
Yeah, why is it that we think that like taking a friendship to the next level is taboo?
Or is going to ruin the friendship.
Yeah, that's what it is.
There's plenty of experiences that I've had where it's friendship and then you date and then you go, oh, that didn't quite work out like that. And then you're back to friends again. And I think that's very much a possibility.
Yeah. For me, I think like the idea of dating has like, you know, we have to go on a date. Like, do I like this person? Are they meeting my needs in this way? Like, I was on OkCupid for a little while and like, the idea of meeting a stranger and seeing if we're compatible, I was just like, oh, I am not. My life is really awesome right now. I have like a lot of friends. I have a lot of family. I have a lot of like people who matter to me. And so the only way you're going to get me off of this space is if you offer me an irresistible invitation. And like, most people were just like, what do you mean, like an irresistible invitation? I was like, something that seems like it's really cool. So if we don't like each other, I'm still having fun tonight.
Yeah. And that's the thing that I always say about online dating. And we'll talk a bit about online dating is I find it difficult because I know that I am a full sensory experience. And I imagine that everybody else is as well. And how can you really get that on an app? You know, so that's what I struggle with. You know, a picture of me ain't going to cut it. Like,
totally.
Yeah.
I feel like I have an anti-internet. In on the internet, I am like, I repel people. In person, people seem to find me very charming.
You're wonderful.
But online, I must, the way I write my profiles or the way I like inhabit that online space, I just never, almost never match with anybody. Yeah. And I've just, whether it's on Tinder or OkCupid or any other sort of site, it's very rare. And usually the other person initiating that has, I've ever had relationships or gone anywhere from dating.
But you don't initiate stuff in person either.
Yeah, it's because I'm terrible at knowing when people are into me.
Like, I had to get really, really awkward to ask John.
Yes.
It was really...
Tell us the story.
Oh, God.
We don't have long enough for this story. I'm sure it's
but
really...
But it was cute as fuck. Cute. It
as
was
F,
cute.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and I think the other point to note as well, like, is people are using online dating platforms because a lot of people socialize a lot less as well. And so it's kind of this vicious cycle of being caught into, well, that's where everyone else is and that's how you meet people.
And there's also, the, I guess, this like instant satisfaction of like, oh, I didn't like this person, I'll just meet the next person and swipe right, swipe left. Like, you know, there's like, oh, if this person isn't exactly who I'm looking for, then there's like 1,000 other people that I don't have to try to understand this person as a human being.
I've actually had a lot of fun doing old-fashioned speed dating, like getting in a room and like sitting in front of someone and like job interview style talking to 20 people in a row has been one of the most satisfying experiences I've ever had.
Well, because
even not going on a date with people.
Yeah, but you can also tell chemistry when you see someone in the flesh and you look them in the eye, which you can't online. And so I think even if it is like doing some nerdy speed dating, there's something to be said for that.
Totally.
And a lot of the time people don't know how to initiate conversation with each other. It's really hard for everyone. Yeah. And the people who are really good at it, that's always a bit concerning as well. So yeah, I think there are more events like that cropping up at the moment. And I actually started one of my own events outside of my work that I do at Thorn Harbor because I felt so strongly about there not being enough spaces for queer women and people who are attracted to queer women. And so I know that Unicorns Party are doing a speed dating thing. I know that there's been other workshops and stuff, but I know that you mentioned one, Jenna, called Queer Flirting by Jeremy Shubb.
Jeremy Shubb put on one, like, I guess it was 8 months ago, and it was like specifically for people who are queer to like learn how to flirt with each other.
Isn't that cute?
Because so often it's like, oh, is this person, do they like me or do they just want to be friends? Or I'm okay with it being friends, but I would really love to make out with you, but I don't know if you want to make out with me, so I'm just not going to say anything.
People have made memes about it, like it's actually a real problem within the community.
Yeah.
But there's also lots of other cool, like special interest things in the queer community. There's sports teams, there's choirs, there's whatnot, and a lot of people volunteer so that can meet other queer people as well for organizations like Joy and Thorn Harbor. So it is possible if you're a shy person to meet IRL as well.
Totally.
As someone who met one of their partners through a volunteer organization, John says, looking at Jenna, I would definitely recommend volunteering as a way to get to meet like-minded people.
Yeah, totally.
You're doing an activity with other people who care about the same thing.
Yeah, and there's Queer Polyamory in Melbourne, and they've done board game nights, and Polyamory and Polyvic does meetups and
we do social events and other sort of things. I know there's a lot of
So if you hop on to social medias,
Facebook.
And most importantly, just ask. It's so important to ask. It's so important to say, like, oh, I find you attractive. Do you have, is there any chemistry there and that kind of stuff? Even though it's really scary, the more we communicate like that and the more we're used to rejection as well. Like, it's like, oh, that, you don't feel that way? That's great. Now what else are we up to? The more we'll normalize that ability to communicate.
And just quickly touching on consent, it's like when someone tells you no, that's a beautiful thing. Respect the no. It is someone helping, you know, set their own boundaries, and honoring that is a wonderful thing.
And that was one of the biggest things I learned at Jenna's workshop, actually, which is called The Enthusiastic Yes. And it's about like, absolutely. And as I said to you off air, like that workshop really changed my life as someone who was wanting to explore being in non-monogamous relationships, who had never had to say no before or who had never liked hearing no. And it's that kind of, when someone says no to you, it's not personal.
Yeah. And if you can see it as a gift and like, as you know, they're freeing you to look for your yes elsewhere, that can be like a really revolutionary
thing. And it's sometimes really hard to remember that because you get invested in the story of like, well, this could be this thing if you would only be like on board. But like, if you can remember, oh, actually, no, this person doesn't want to be on board, but I can find somebody else who will.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this is great.
Yeah, no, totally. And we'll talk a bit more about your workshop after the break. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. So what advice would you have for anyone who's decided they'd like to explore polyamory?
Oh, man. Read. I mean, I know John wouldn't agree with me.
No, I it depends on, like, how you learn. Because I think there's lots of resources in all kinds of speeds. So if you love reading books, there's heaps of good books out there. If you like reading articles online, there's heaps of posts there. And then check in your local area to see if there's any events. Mm. They might not be too close, but, you know, discussion groups are a great place to just hear people talk about their own life and their struggles and their excitements too.
Yeah, and, cool. And if you're in Melbourne, I have a poly panel that I put on with 8 people every 2 months, and it's always 8 different people, so you get a really broad range of stories. But it's called I Think I Might Be Polyamorous, Now What?
Yeah.
And so it's for people who are just starting to explore that and they just want to hear what other people do.
Yeah, cool. Do you have anything to input, Josh?
Jealousy is something that's going to come up for sure when you start to enter these things. And I feel like not thinking of jealousy as a ending, but rather as a start to a communication is a really nice thing. Because a lot of times when we think of jealousy, it's like it closes down the conversation. It closes down the situation. But if we go, oh, I'm feeling jealous, and what now? You know, like that's an actual opening point that I think can actually be really healing and helpful.
Yeah. Why do we avoid jealousy so much?
Yeah,
we don't avoid anything else.
Yeah.
We just got to deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. If our listeners are in monogamous relationships and would like to have conversations about potentially opening them up, what advice would you give to them?
Ooh, that's a hard one. You know, it's interesting to kind of start things off hypothetical to kind of judge how much this is going to impact your relationship. Because obviously, you know, if you want to open up and your partner is completely anti that idea, then it's like, you know, you have to figure out how important is it to you that you be polyamorous in this relationship. And sometimes people decide that that's not, like, you know, they don't want to lose that person. And so they change or, yeah.
I would also like to say there are people who are like polyamorous and monogamous at the same time. So one partner might be monogamous and the other person is polyamorous.
Yeah.
And that is a dynamic that can totally work with the right levels of communication and just being honest with how you're feeling and what you want. Because you don't have to have multiple lovers.
Yeah.
Right? I don't want, you know, if one partner wants to be polyamorous, that doesn't mean the other person should be.
Yeah, and it also doesn't mean that that person doesn't love the mono person enough, or, you know, there's no failing in the other person that, you know, that makes the other person want to be polyamorous. It's just a thing that you want to explore within yourself.
Yeah, so, and I like what you said about making it hypothetical, because for a lot of people, you know, they may have to then sacrifice a relationship that they're in going forward. So it's important to kind of try to think about how that might look.
And one thing we talked about off air is it's not a very good solution to problems to try to open up. It's better actually to be working on your problems first, and then if you're in a good place, decide to open up from there. And I'd say that's true of just any general communication between people. If you're in a good place, that's the time to bring up the hard stuff. And we usually wait for the bad time in order to start to say all that kind of stuff, but once you're in the bad time, your shields are higher and the ability to communicate becomes less smooth.
Such a key point.
And polyamory is going to add more people into a situation, so it's going to get more complex. If you are having a bad time and you add more people, there's going to be, you know, more people to communicate with.
Yeah.
I always think about, like, relationships in polyamory aren't like a one-to-one. They're not like one times, two times, three times. It's like a 0.1, 0.2. It's that little bit extra work you have to do in terms of like relationship dynamics and things like that.
Well, like so the difference between a monogamous pair and a triad is actually one relationship versus 6 relationships.
Wow.
Because if you're having, you know, a mono relationship, it's just the two of you. But if you have a triad, then it's like person A's relationship to person B's relationship to C, C to A. But then there's also the way A relates to B and C's relationship, C relates to A and B's relationship. And yeah, so there's 6 different relationships there.
Yeah, wow.
So it just gets more complicated from there.
Yeah. So another huge breakthrough for the community, which we talked about briefly earlier in the show, was getting marriage equality. And we saw a lot of the damage that was done to our community through the postal survey. Do you think therapists are starting to see the after effects of this on the queer community as a therapist yourself, Jenna?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the fact that it was passed was such a relief to people. Mm. So it's a lot of people have like, at least that was kind of worth it-ish, like because it got us what we wanted. But it was so traumatizing to so many people. And I think like being a nonconformist therapist, like so somebody who's like supporting untraditional lifestyles, what often happens is that people come to me and they go, I looked for you because I talked to my therapist and they just did not understand at all. Like, you know, I said I wanted to date multiple people and they were just like, there's something really wrong with that. Or like, you know, they start thinking about like being gender nonconforming or something, and their therapists are just labeling them.
They try to pathologize everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, I feel like it's so damaging to people when their identity is shamed, particularly from a mental health perspective and like a mental health practitioner. Like, for you to be opening up your heart to someone and to have them be like, well, that's wrong, is like so incredibly damaging. Yeah. So I really try to be as inclusive as possible and to be like, you know, your identity is valid. You know, you matter.
Mm.
And whatever works for you, I want to support you in that.
Yeah, cool. And just speaking about marriage and polyamory, how does that work? Is it completely illegal?
Yeah, as far as I can tell.
Well, it's illegal to marry more than one person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And it's also pretty frowned upon when it comes to the government's convention of how relationships are structured.
Yeah.
Like, because, you know, the way that the systems are all labeled is you have a partner and that is it. You know, there's no other dynamics, and they don't always recognize that it depends on who you're dealing with. So yeah, it can be very difficult, and especially in cases of child custody.
Yeah, well, so I did my master's thesis on polyamorous parenting, and one of the people had been polyamorous and had a kid with one of their partners, and they were married and they got divorced amicably. That person started dating a mono person who freaked out about the fact that this other person was poly, and they took the kid and just disappeared. And because everything had been fine up until that point, the other parent had the right to take the kid and disappeared for like 6 months, and the other person couldn't find them, and like then had to the person who was poly had to pretend that they weren't so that the court wouldn't consider them a bad parent. And it was like, you know, they had both been polyamorous together and had, you know, agreed upon that and were fine with that, but legally it looked incredibly bad in the legal system. And like, it's just, it boggles my mind that people are facing like such discrimination just for, you know, something that doesn't actually hurt anybody. And they've actually done studies that have found that polyamorous parenting is incredibly useful for the children because you're getting more support.
What's better than two parents?
Yeah. Three.
More parents, yeah. Yeah. Totally. And there's been a lot of terms thrown around here today with regards to polyamory and relationships. Do you have some terms you'd like to teach our listeners about to help them understand?
Compersion is always a good one, because so compersion is kind of the opposite of jealousy. It's getting satisfaction and joy from the fact that your partner is enjoying something somewhere else. And like, people feel compersion for, like, you know, when you get a phone call from your friend and they're like, they just got a new job and they're so excited about it. And you're like, oh, that's so great, I'm so happy for you. That's compersion.
Being happy for someone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it can also exist at the same time as jealousy.
Yeah.
So you can be really, really happy that your partner is, you know, going on a date with somebody who they really care about. And you can also be like, oh my God, and I hate this so much because what it means to me. And I feel so inadequate in so many ways right now.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no such thing as being the perfect poly person, you know? Like, do you have any terms you want to throw out there, John?
Not particularly. I'm really bad with terms. I try to just, you know, use conventional language, but yeah.
What's the term that people use for their partner's partner?
That's, metamour.
That's a metamour.
Metamour.
Yeah. So yeah, your partner's partner. It's basically this person that you're tied to through someone you're relating with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Josh and John are metamours right now. I'm a hinge or a pivot or a
fours. High five.
We're going to play a song and we'll be right back to do a bit of a recap on all of the things we talked about here tonight, as well as give you some information on resources you can go and check out more from. This is Well, Well, Well here on Joy, and I've been joined in the studio tonight by the wonderful Jenna Trossel, John
Nicolaides
and Josh
Coleman.
Josh Coleman. Yeah. And they've been talking and we've been giggling and learning lots about polyamory and alternative relationships, which has been very informative for me and hopefully you listeners as well. Do we have any last points we'd like to make whilst I have you here?
I think it's important for people to know that you don't have to be dating anyone to be polyamorous. Polyamory is an identity that you can resonate with no matter whether you're with one person, multiple people, or alone. Yeah.
Yeah. And are you all going on a cute Valentine's date after this?
Yeah.
Yep.
I guess we are, yeah.
Yeah. Was it supposed to be for Valentine's Day?
Yeah, well, so John and I had a hike that was kind of like our Valentine's Day thing earlier. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, hey, so how do you feel about me inviting Josh to dinner?
And you know, I really had to be twisted. Like, my arm really had to twist. But I was like, okay. I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
We didn't have to twist. Yeah, it was exciting.
It's cool. Like, watching the three of you together and the dynamic you have as well is really beautiful. But also, like, as I said to you off air, I think sometimes people just need the permission to go ahead and try something. And yeah, it's like, if you're having that feeling that you want to do it, just give it a go.
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
Yeah. Yep. Communication is just like the most important thing in any of this.
And you respect people's consent, you know, ask. And if they say no, thank you. Like, thank them for that.
Mm, that's a big one. Mm. Well, we should talk about some resources that people can go to if they'd like to learn some more. Yes. So the go-to book that everyone seems to go to at the moment is The Ethical Slut.
Yeah, there's also Sex at Dawn and Opening Up.
These books, they get revised as well, don't they? So they're like updated.
Yeah, The Ethical Slut isn't that's like fifth edition or something like that.
Yeah, and there's audiobooks as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, podcasts. I know that here on Joy, there's the Bi-Polycast, which is part of Triple Bypass. Hello, Ruby, Anthony, and James, which is great that they're doing that. Josh, you mentioned
Savage Love.
Yeah.
So there's a guy named Dan Savage who does a thing in North America prominently, but he talks about all of these things fluently.
I've listened to some. They're really good. Mm. Any other podcasts that we know of?
No.
New?
No,
off the
top of my head.
Oh,
no.
I love Esther Perel's Where Should We Begin?
Okay.
It's not specifically poly, but she just talks to, she's a therapist and she talks to couples about their relationship and the things that she talks about are relevant to so many people.
She specializes in when people cheat, for example, and then how to reframe the relationship afterwards.
Yeah.
And I think all those lessons on communication are really important for people.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and the two workshops that you run, which we mentioned earlier, or there's three, isn't there?
There's two right now that I have set, that I have dates for.
Yeah.
So I have The Enthusiastic Yes on the 23rd of February from 4 to 6 p.m., and I think I might be polyamorous. Now what? The next one is on March 30th from 3:30 to 6 p.m. And that will have 8 people.
All these things are shared on the Spectra Counseling Facebook page, right?
Yes, they are.
Spectra Counseling is your business name?
Yes.
So if people want to access counseling and workshops, they can go there?
Yes. Although actually the workshops aren't on my my actual website. They're just on Facebook.
On Facebook.
Yeah.
Cool.
And Polyvic and Queer Poly Melbourne are also good resources for people. And Polyfinda sometimes?
They do events and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Also, if you're looking for counselling services, there's a couple of other queer, poly, kink-friendly counsellors around Melbourne. Tammy Moran, Jeremy Shubb, and Liz Scarf, was that the other person you mentioned?
Yep. There's a really good list of people on the Curious Creatures website.
Cool.
That's a great resource for anyone who's looking for sex-positive resources in a bunch of, healthcare, counseling, websites. Yeah, check it out.
Curious Creatures.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, it's been really fabulous having you all on the show. Thank you.
Thanks.
Happy Valentine's Day, everyone.
Yes.
And we will be back next Thursday at 8 p.m. You've been listening to Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.